second, India have won the Test match. India have won the series. They're going to get back for two.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the 81 All Out podcast. This is your host, Siddhartha Vaidyanathan, and good to be back after a mini break. Work, travel, and health concerns and everything meant that we weren't able to record over the last 2 weeks, but glad to be back. Today I'm joined by the regular crew, Mahesh, Ashoka, and Kartikeya. And we're here to talk about the recently concluded test series between India and South Africa. In South Africa, South Africa won the first test by an innings and 32 runs. India won the second test by 7 wickets. The series is shared. We are all lamenting that it's not a 3-test series or a longer series, but that's the way it is, I guess. These days, it's South Africa are not even able to send their full strength side for a series against New Zealand because of T20 and their T20 tournament and so on. Anyway, so let's chat about the tests. Highly entertaining, both of them, bowler dominated, which is always a kind of series that I love, much better than the flat wicket, 500 plays, 600 kind of series. So much is happening, fast bowlers in the game. Of course, you wish that there was something for the spinners as well. And there was also a lot of chat about the pitches, and we can talk about that. But just overall, I think these series are really entertaining. It challenges the batting. It brings out the quality of fast bowling, the depth of fast bowling. And both teams were fantastic. I mean, Rabada, Bumrah, Siraj. You had Ngidi bowl some great spells. You had the new bowler Berger bowl well. So yeah, I mean, there was so much of entertainment. Some fine catching too, fine slip catching, fine closing catching, and some stupendous innings. I mean, KL Rahul, Dean Elgar in the first test, and then Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma. Like, there was some short but fantastic batting. I mean, Elgar not so short, but even the cameos were great to watch. Oh yeah, how can I forget the phenomenal innings on the final day? Yeah, I mean, final 2 days. Yeah. So anyway, let me bring everyone else in. Thoughts and prayers, or whatever else you want to bring in.
This is the first episode of the new year, so 2023 has been a great year for India. We had like 3 great tournaments, WTC finals, which we won, Asia Cup, we won, World Cup, we won. And then now we have never won a series in South Africa, which we won. So it's been a great 12 months for India. And that is something that we should mention.
I think. Wait, what is this fictional World Cup that you won, by the way?
So that is how we will remember 2023 now.
Oh, okay, that way. On paper, you mean? On paper, we won. Yeah.
On paper and in memory, we have won everything. Everything is okay. Right. Otherwise, I don't want to talk about 2023 ever again. But yeah, man, this was...
Hello, 2023 is the year when CSK had their greatest ever IPL victory or something, as you only keep saying.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. Yeah. That is true. And also, we won a lot of IDFC First Bank T20 series, IDFC First Bank ODI series, bilaterals. Yeah, so that way it was memorable. But this series was very good, dude. It was very enjoyable. I would say this was unplayable bowlers v. unplayable bowlers. Like, not the South Africa versus India unplayable bowlers. Like, unplayable bowlers like Rabada and Bumrah, who bowled really, you know, you couldn't touch their bowling. And Shardul and Prasidh, I don't think they should be playing in test cricket for various reasons. So Prasidh, because I think he's too raw. And Shardul, I think, because I'm thinking this is becoming a mistake.
Because he's too processed.
Yeah,
even you have switched sides, which means that it's high time he is phased out. Yeah.
No, yeah, Shardul as a test cricketer, I mean, he's still the Lord, but and he will prove his worth in March to May when he plays for CSK. All that is true, but I don't think Test cricket is something they should be, you know, he should be considered for.
But Test cricket is not good enough for the Lord.
That is also true. Anyways, it's a dying format. This entire two Test match series, they finished in 5 days, man. It's not even 5 days. It's like 4 days and one session. And it's, yeah. it's not even 4 days and one session. The first Test match, it rained also. So basically, in 3.5 days, they finished two Tests. What kind of pitches these guys are doing? What is this?
In fact, on day one, day one was a perfect sort of illustration for Tendulkar's idea that he comes up with every year, right? The four innings ODI. So day one of the second Test, they could have actually finished this whole Test in one day, and Tendulkar would have said, see, this is exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, you could have had a three Test match series within the second Test. Like, I think another two Tests could comfortably fit in the remaining 3 days.
Some three batters would have gone to the hospital. Someone would have been like massively injured and all that. So, yeah.
That is true. So that way, it was very entertaining to watch, because generally when, you know, bowlers have the upper hand, matches become very entertaining. It becomes like a lottery kind of scenario. Having said that, I enjoyed Markram's innings, man. I think it's one of the best innings we've seen. I mean, he did take a lot of risk. He was dropped and all that. But his shot making was amazing, dude. I've been saying this for years, that this guy is quality. And even in World Cup, he was like, you know, pristine shot-making batsman. So, very happy to see that he got 100. Very, very sad to see Elgar get 100. I know this is his last Test. Everyone is saying he's a gritty batsman. They don't make it. They don't make batsmen like him anymore. Good. Good that they don't make batsmen like him anymore. I don't want to see a batsman dodging 70,000 edges on the way to 188, man. I mean, already I was like frustrated with this last tour when he dodged 30,000 edges and got them to two Test victories. I mean, how much luck can a man have, dude?
I think I might have mentioned it on the group, right? I think Elgar is a kind of player who grows up in those conditions and sort of molds his technique to actually give himself a little bit more luck. I mean, simply by the way in which he is shaping up to play the ball, that is the feeling I got. Like, it is like a home advantage for him. Like, but, for instance, I don't think Elgar will have, Karthikeyan can look at the stats, but I don't think Elgar will have as much luck in playing when he's playing in India, for instance, compared to playing in South Africa. Because it matters, how you shape up.
Also, the bowlers that you face also matters. No, I mean, he was facing Bumrah, Siraj, And they were very, very accurate. No, so they got the ball in the right spot and made it move a little bit here, there. And they were very close to getting the edge. So I don't know if he was playing, you know, first-class bowlers in South Africa. Sure, the conditions are hard, but they also tend to be inaccurate. Like he thrashed Shardul, no? He thrashed Prasid. So if you're inaccurate, he will thrash you around. And familiarity with those conditions will help, but still, yeah, very lucky, man. I mean, I envy that guy's luck, and I also worry for him, because if he has used up all this in his last match, he has still a lot more life to go. So I don't know where he's getting his luck from now on.
That is life luck. Don't worry, cricket luck and life luck are different.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that also Karthikeyan will write a blog saying how luck is not opposite to life or whatnot. I don't know what
he says. No. Karthikeyan will write a blog on mean reversion, which essentially is the same as what cricketers say: in the long run, luck evens out. Then he'll write a post against why luck doesn't even out and why there is no principled logic on luck should be evening out.
So coming back to the topic, South Africa kind of deserved to, you know, win the first Test, because they bowled really well. I mean, especially Rabada, dude. That guy is like awesome. I know we have a Cummins Bhakt here, but I think Rabada is right up there with Cummins and Bumrah. People will say he's not done well in Asian conditions and whatnot, but I think he has the skill at least at a skill level, he's really, really good bowler. And it was fantastic watching him bowl. And they got Engidi as well. I mean, the second test was a lottery, but if it was at least a slightly calmer pitch, I thought, you know, South Africa had the edge if the second test was played on slightly conventional pitch, because Engidi is really good in South African conditions and against India he's really good. So I thought they would have won it 2-0 if the pitch was not this crazy.
Yeah, in a way they shot themselves in the foot by preparing this pitch, because the first test, India's lack of depth was exposed with Shardul and Prasidh giving away quite a bit of runs. But in the second test, because of the nature of the pitch, even without that depth, India with Bumrah and Siraj could manage to bowl them out pretty quick. So yeah, I think it's like the indoor pitch that India prepared against Australia, right? Where Nathan Lyon basically just won it for Australia. Had India prepared more like a Delhi or Nagpur kind of pitch, where the skills of, like, you know, where the India would, the Australian batting would not be able to play as well, then it would have been different. Anyway, Mahesh, thoughts? We haven't really gone into the big picture thoughts yet, so maybe you can get into it. India's chance of winning a series in South Africa and yet again not happening. Yeah,
I think, every time India goes there, at least till since 2010, we felt like India goes in with a solid chance of finally winning a series in South Africa. Yet again, they seem to have missed it. But to be honest, and we discussed this last time as well. In fact, last time, it appeared like, because we had the full bowling attack, it appeared like we had the better chance. And we keep repeating this quite often, that even though the South African bowling attack then was not necessarily better than the Indian attack overall, but they were better suited for the conditions. I know KD talked about the height difference and so on. That's one factor. But even without that, I mean, you could have a bowler with the exact same skills as Shami, but like born and brought up in Australia, he's not going to be as effective in India, right? It is just the fact that they know what length to hit and they know what pace to bowl and they know how to get the carry in those wickets and sort of what length to bowl for like those wickets and so on. And that is a natural advantage that they have, and that's going to play out, right? I mean, it's going to take... So for the Indian bowling attack to be better than South African bowling attack in South Africa, they don't just have to be better bowlers. They have to be much better bowlers in that series for them to sort of even out the home advantage. And I didn't actually watch much of the first test. I was stuck in Taiwan for, I shouldn't say stuck. I was on a holiday. I did manage to catch only the highlights, so to speak. So I can't speak much about the first test as such. But the second test was, okay, we need to talk about the second test at sort of multiple levels. First, it's something that we've discussed quite a bit in the past and will continue to bat in favor of such outlier wickets, so long as they remain outliers. One, it was an outlier wicket. And Siraj had an outlier day, right? He bowled beautifully. Let's not take any credit away from him. But he's bowled equally beautifully in other innings where he's not got the rewards like that. So he bowled the perfect sort of length for that wicket. And he was patient. He was consistent. And even after all that, you know, the chips were falling in India's favor in that one session practically. And once you get them all out for the 50s, such a low score... You know, it's exactly what happened to India even in the World Cup final, for instance, right? When you're defending such a small score, it's not like Rabada is less consistent or Engidi usually bowls such freebies that he bowled to Rohit. They don't have a choice but to attack and to go all out attack, right? And when you go for such option, it comes with its own risks. And then, of course, Rohit is a solid enough batsman to capitalize on such attacking bowling. And Engidi was actually had a quite an unusual start actually. And once you had that kind of start, the head start that India got after just two and a half sessions was so massive that it would have taken a heck of a lot of effort from South Africa to pull it back from there. So, you know, like South Africa had chips falling in their favor, which KD has also written about when they were batting particularly, that they survived a lot of chances. And in the second test, they barely survived any chance. So it kind of evened out. And when you play on wickets like this, I mean, that's really the margin of difference between the two teams. Like Bumrah's five-wicket haul was not just a matter of conditions, it was a matter of conditions and how he exploited it. Whereas with Siraj, he could bowl equally well, perhaps even like 50% better than what he bowled. But the wicket also has to assist, and like the chips have to fall in his favor, right? Even if the wickets are equally helpful, on another day, Elgar is going to survive a lot more sort of chances, you know, a lot more edges, a lot more missed sort of shots and so on. This is the perfect storm, right? It was the ideal conditions. He bowled the perfect length, and every second chance that they were taking, they got out.
Yeah, I noticed a few comparisons between the way Siraj and Stuart Broad, right? I mean, even Stuart Broad is the kind of bowler who, like, gets, when he gets on, basically, then, you know, he will go on like some rampage, get six wickets, and or he'll get like some mega number of wickets falling his way. But of course, Broad had the advantage of bowling with conditions that perfectly favor him much more often than Siraj will perhaps get.
No, another, see, that there is a difference there, that is that Siraj has a luxury so far in his career that Broad doesn't usually have. Because if you see the last 10 years or so, Anderson doesn't play every series. He's kind of exempt from certain conditions and all that. In those conditions, you know, Broad has to shoulder the burden of being the lead bowler, and therefore he has to also contain. Siraj so far in his 20 or 30, I don't know how many tests he has played, some 20 tests. He's been given the license to attack all the time, you know, and he has done that. Sometimes, like in the first test, to his detriment, where he gave 90 runs away in 20 overs. You know, that Broad usually, as he has grown in his career, I don't think Broad has had that luxury. That is the difference. But yeah, there is similarity where when they get wickets, they tend to get wickets. But that, I think, is because more because of the skill and, you know, similar type of bowling conditions that these guys get.
Yeah, 22 tests.
But very simply put, like, I mean, basically the 6 for 15 is less likely to happen than 6 for 61. I mean, that's simply the point, right? The irrespective of your skills, it's not.
Yeah. 55 all out is itself an outlier, yeah, right? Yeah. Like how many teams are India going to get all out for 55?
I think India are going to struggle to replace Ishan Sharma. I mean, and Ishan Sharma also became Ishan Sharma after like nearly a decade of being like pretty average, man. It takes a long time for bowlers, especially it has historically taken a long time for Indian fast bowlers, the few that have matured, to actually mature. And sadly, until this current generation, by the time like Srinath and Zahir Khan became like skillful bowlers, they acquired like control and they learned to bowl from round the wicket and over the wicket, and they learned to move the ball both ways off the pitch. And, you know, by the time they got to do all those things, they were no longer, you know, as quick as they used to be. So, you know, that's sort of been the story of like India's fast bowling. From like, if you leave out Kapil, who started out like with his outswing, and I mean, I have no idea like why seam movement didn't seem to be like a big deal in the 80s. And it was all pace and swing. You know, Kapil was an outswing bowler, although Richard Hattie did seam the ball quite a lot. But even then, you know, it seemed to be enough, you know, being able to bowl outswing. And to be fair, even like Dale Steyn with his outswing, it seemed to be enough for him to take wickets in the 2000s, especially when the ball was new. But this generation, what's remarkable is that so many of them are such mature bowlers so early. Like Bumrah and Siraj are just turning 30 yet. I think Bumrah has not yet turned 30, or has he? He probably has. But I mean, he's not had an apprenticeship of like 50 test matches playing for India. And so that's why India, the difference is that India are very close to like South Africa, England, Australia when they go there. So, I mean, it takes just a little bit of luck for them to win a series. And that happened in Australia some years ago. Right. Even in this series, like, you know, Elgar was really lucky, man. And he wasn't lucky in the second test. Like, like he was out twice within like 11 errors. In the first test, in that 185, he survived 58 errors. Whereas even India bowled out for 153, I think all told they survived 57 errors for 10 wickets. The gap is very, very narrow between India and South Africa, right? And like this, South Africa has got some fantastic batsmen. And I mean, this Markram is like superstar. You know, he's got all the shots. He's got a terrific defense. And he's the one player in the sort of the last 5 years or so who reminds me of Kohli so much. You know, he's got that same sort of complete, gay, uncomplicated game, you know. And this Beddingham is also like a top player. He looks like a seasoned, well-prepared player. Like he's clearly not like, you know, inexperienced at first-class level. He's got a lot of runs and a high average. And he's used to facing like speed and all. And I'd like to see him face spin, but there was no spin at all in this series. Not one ball from...
What actually are you saying?
I know you like to dismiss everything Ashwin does.
No,
but he did bowl some balls.
Not from South Africa, I mean. They didn't bowl any. And Ashwin did bowl 17 overs of spin. But come on, I mean, that's like playing Ashwin on that Centurion pitch is like, you know, it's like playing, I don't know.
Not the first time Mumbai has downplayed Tamil Nadu players' contribution.
Dude,
it's okay,
dude,
go ahead.
Dude, he did bowl really well. And he created a jeopardy, not in the extent that he will create in Indian pitches, but he did.
Yeah, but also Beddingham is a right-hander, man. Is also, I mean, if you want to play Ashwin, then you want to be a right-hander. You want to play him in South Africa or, you know, in England.
Oh my God! Now he's not just saying Ashwin is ineffective because it is South African pitch. He's saying, but because the batsman is a right-hander.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That's what the figures say.
Anyway, there's very little you can talk about Ashwin from this series. So, I mean, if at all if this was a home series, then I can understand. But
no, but that's not the point. He bowled some overs. You can't deny it. I'm just saying.
Okay. He bowled some overs. That's true. The point is that the gap is so narrow, no? That you can imagine a few things ending differently and India sort of winning 4 out of the last 5 tests in South Africa. You know, a couple of edges going to hand, you know, that sort of stuff. So, and that wasn't always the case. I mean, in India, previously the range of situations in which India could actually imagine winning a test match was really, really narrow. Like, they had to draw like all sorts of things that had to fall in place and be just right for them to like be in a position where they could win. And that's not there now, no? I mean, this Siraj is a really, really terrific bowler. You know, and he's constantly trying to kill the batsman, you know, which is like really something really wonderful to see. You know, and then Jasprit Bumrah is also like that, but Jasprit Bumrah just that little bit extra class than Mohammad Siraj. You know, but you know, I don't know. They're a good pair, man. And like when Shami comes back, they'll be better. And the new guys are not in that class, man. I mean, I don't. Mukesh Kumar, like he got a really nice wicket to bowl on, but you know, Prasidh Krishna is new, and you know, he. I mean, I don't think he worked out like what length to bowl on this pitch, and I don't think he worked out how he was going to get people out. You know, they were trying all sorts of ways for him to get people out. You know, for a while he was trying to bounce the batsman out. For a while he was trying to, you know, get the batsman out caught in a slip cotton. There was just lots of different things going on, and he's never really. And also, it's you know, I think South Africa went after him a little bit, which. The guy in his first test, you can understand why they did that. Maybe one of the reasons for that is that like this wicket was offering so much seam movement that a lot of bowlers were maybe bowling a little too full. So, you know, everybody was trying to work out like what to bowl and where to bowl, except for like Bumrah and Rabada, who figured it out really quickly and found what they had to do in both test matches really fast, you know. But all the others were like, you know, I mean, Jansen had a pretty iffy start also to his spell in the first test, you know, where, you know, but I mean, he's like basically really like difficult bowler to face. You know, he's just so tall. You know, that needs to be said.
No, I think they went full also because they tried that back of a length thing and a lot of LBWs got turned down because you are not going to get LBWs on this pitch, no?
Yeah.
If you bowl
no, but even in the first test, Jansen was... I was talking about the first test. I think Jansen was really struggling in the first test. You know, until he sort of got into his second spell and then his third spell was even better. I got the impression there's just a lot of, like, if you take out, like, the all-time great quality of, you know, Bumrah and Rabada, no? The other bowlers, they seem to be, like, you know, feeling their way around, trying to work out, like, what to do. And, like, they're running into batsmen who are, like, waiting to kill them, you know? Like, there's, like, you know, this amazing number of shots the batsmen are playing. You know, mostly because they didn't trust the pitch either. You know, so they thought there's just so much seam movement that I don't want to die poking at something. If I have to die, I'm going to die swinging. That was basically what it was, you know, and the extra bounce was also causing a lot of trouble with both ways. I mean, it was all the whole like conditions in the two test matches, no? They made any thought of attrition or control or anything like that, like, really, really suboptimal. Like, everybody, batter, bowler, everybody was going, like, flat out, like, attack, 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 all the time, you know.
Yeah, so, and, which brings me to the point, actually, which is that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this pitch and about how, you know, this is, like, I mean, multiple layers of conversation about this pitch, right? Number one, why this is considered okay when the pitch turning from day one is not, as Rohit Sharma mentioned. Or whether a pitch should gradually evolve from being like a seamer-friendly pitch to a thin pitch over 5 days and why Test cricket needs that and all. But honestly speaking, Test cricket is at its most exciting on such pitches. I mean, yeah, I mean, of course, if you have such a pitch for every match, it may become like a little tedious and you may start getting bored by it. But when you see this like once in a while, how can you take your eyes off the game? I mean, this is pretty much what, I mean, in a marketing sense, if you are marketing Test cricket, this is the kind of pitch you would want, right? I mean, I don't know why it is becomes a situation where you feel this is bad for Test cricket. I say it's great for Test cricket.
It is, but I mean, it is from a viewer point of view. But I think it takes control, as Karthikeya was saying, it takes control out of the game. No, then what is the skill? I mean, the same guy, that Berger guy, he had a good debut in which he got a lot of wickets. But put him in another pitch where it's not doing as much. Does he have the control? I mean, or will he bowl and get as much wickets? That's the question, no? So that makes skill
Listen, every format has that kind of lopsidedness, right? Like T20, you have a lot of average batters who are slamming everything out of the park. So that is also similar, no? That is also like skill, where skill is being...
No, I mean, but that is by design, that in T20, batters are supposed to hit and it is designed that way. Here, it is a question, I mean, you're taking away aspects of tests. In tests, draws are allowed. In tests, stalemates are allowed. And reaching a stalemate for teams is also, you know, very thrilling to watch. It is built into the design of the game. What this pitch does is, it takes the stalemate out of the game.
But that's also part of the design, right? I mean, Test cricket is designed for all kinds of situations. One is, of course, the stalemate. But, okay, even on a pitch like this, Markram played the way he did because he didn't back himself to survive for too long. Now, isn't that also a display of skill from the batting side, right? And sure, if you play every test on a wicket like this, it's not good. But that's the thing. In a T20 game, you know what's a good T20 game. You know what's a good T20 skill. Right? But in Test cricket, you can't define it so narrowly. You could have a thrilling match where 500 plays 600 and then like eventually there's a collapse in the last day. Or you could have a test which finishes off in 2 days. Now, we can't have too much of any of these. And you know, we've been having a lot more result tests in the last 15 years than before. Has that led to lesser test cricket because you take stalemate away? No, you know, it's in fact led to more exciting games. So, I mean, I completely agree with Sibi, but the point is that test cricket doesn't need marketing only from one type of games. It requires it from all types of games. A test match which looks like a boring draw, which comes to life on the last day, in fact, sometimes the last session, is equally thrilling, right? Which is the whole point of test cricket. It is not one type of exciting contest. It can be all kinds of exciting contests. It can be all kinds of skills. It can be Ashwin dominating one day, Rabada dominating another day.
That's Philander. True, but I'm saying that to have a test, a pitch like Sibyl, this...
Wait, let him finish. He was about to say Rohit Sharma dominating on a third day.
I'm saying Rohit Sharma dominates on all days. So exactly. He doesn't have to say it. To have one pitch like this every series, I think is not bad. I mean, it's like an outlier pitch, like
Do you think this pitch was by design? I think it was a mistake. I think there was basically too much rain, and he left the grass in to make sure that the cracks didn't open, and it just didn't work for him. I mean, it became, you know, whatever this.
No, motive or whatever the reason for it was is not what I'm saying. I'm saying looking at it from a point of view of. I think it is okay to allow one test match in a series to be such an outlier pitch, whether it's in India or Australia, wherever you want. I mean, it's fine. I think it's great. So, of course.
Yeah, although I would say one thing, that the thing about the Indore pitch and this second test pitch, and actually I would say even the first test pitch, is that it's... Like, you know, you have jeopardy because the pitch is doing a lot. But then it gets to a point where you have jeopardy, so much jeopardy that batters are no longer trying to defend their off stump because they can't, because they don't trust the bounce. You know, so like Rohit Sharma is backing away to leg and trying to hit over extra cover, like the fast bowler over extra cover. That's a huge chance, no? And like, you know, the other openers are like opening. I mean, Aidan Markram... You know, the amazing thing about Aidan Markram's innings was that when he got to that spot picking, phase of his innings, because he had only the tail left to bat with. I mean, he picked his spot so well. You know, like I think he missed maybe he got his 100 and what 99 balls. I think he made false shots to only about 20, 22 of those. Like it was an astonishing assault. You know. But the thing is that he was also playing in a very, very high-risk way. No? He was picking a spot, and once you do that, then, you know, it takes very little for it to become a miss-hit. But the point is that the fact that the batters were sort of gave up trying to defend the off-stump for the most part, you know, that suggests to me that, you know, they didn't think that, you know, technique was useful on this pitch. And that's perhaps a little bit excessively, arbitrary. You know, I don't know that we can avoid these types of pitches because I don't think they're prepared by design. Like, I don't think, like, for example, Indore was prepared by design. I mean, you remember the second Chennai pitch of the 2021 England series, you know, on which, which was like, for Mahesh, the greatest test match in the history of test matches because, you know.
Yeah, Rohit Sharma's greatest innings. Yeah.
What do you mean, Rohit Sharma? Test cricket's greatest innings.
Rohit Sharma made 100 and then Ashwin also made 100.
Okay. I don't know if that's a diss or a compliment. Okay.
To channel the Balayya fan in me, both are not same.
Yes. And Ashwin, of course, got wickets. You know, this is like, you know, this is the test match. Like, Mahesh is going to frame and put on his wall. You know, those wickets were not lotteries. You know, yeah, it was turning, but you could still play. You could still build an innings. you could still like have some method which was not like, you know, backing away to leg and slogging. You know, you could defend. There was some possibility for deliberation, you know. Whereas in Indore, there was no possibility for deliberation, no, because there was so much uneven bounce. I mean, I think the ICC gets a bad rap. I think Rohit Sharma is sort of a little bit frustrated by what people say about Indian pitches. But the point is that I think he's basically wrong about what he says about the ICC. I think the public discourse and the press is prejudiced against Asian pitches, but I don't think the ICC's pitch reports are prejudiced against the Asian pitches. And I think one of the other things is that he's a little bit upset that the World Cup final pitch was not rated high. But that's because like the ICC have a different standard for what is a good one day pitch and what is a good test pitch. You know, for one day they've said that we want a good batting wicket. You know, we want a good batting wicket which encourages stroke play. And so anything which is not that is going to be regarded as, you know, less than very good. So I think Rohit Sharma is basically taking aim at the sort of the wrong target over there. Not instead of aiming for the referees, he should aim at the people he was talking to in that press conference. You know, because they're the ones.
Yeah, I think he's right in spirit, but wrong in who he's targeting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And also, it's a little bit ironic that Rohit Sharma is feeling upset about that World Cup final pitch being rated low. I mean, Rohit Sharma, who claimed he would have batted first on that pitch and who anyway got the chance to bat first on that pitch, on a home pitch against Australia in a World Cup final, and then he's upset that it is a bad pitch. Of course, it's a bad pitch, man. Accept it. What is this?
I don't understand what you guys are talking about, because India anyways won the World Cup. No, so what is all this discussion?
yeah, that's true. On paper. But not they didn't win it on the pitch. They won it on paper.
No, it's not on paper. It's a moral victory.
Yeah.
Morally,
England won the England morally won the Ashes. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so the ICC's pitch review is very, very hard on uneven bounce. And especially when the uneven bounce happens on day one or day two, then they basically, you know, the pitch.
But Kartikeya, his point about transparency is valid. I think they can be more transparent, right?
No, but they are transparent. They have, I mean, I published the form that they use. They've even told me what method they use. It's there. Everybody can read it.
You know, they put the sort of the whatever the data for why it is failing their yardstick, is it?
No, they're sure. I know what the form looks like and how it's filled out. I don't think they're publishing the filled out forms.
So they should know. What stops them from doing that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't like this whole business where you ask like people, you be transparent, because otherwise we are going to assume that you're acting in bad faith. No, that this is not. They are not public officials, man.
Listen, these grounds. Besides, what do they? Okay, now tell me this. What do they lose by putting it out?
Sorry.
What do they lose by putting it out? I'm saying it's to their credit
They don't lose anything. They lose. By giving in to bad faith questions, they lose a lot of morale and they lose a lot of self respect. And nobody should do that, I think. I don't think they are, you know, malevolent. I don't think they act in bad faith. I don't think they're incompetent. I don't think they're stupid. They are very, very good, dear. I mean, compared to what they used to be 25 years ago, the ICC's umpires and pitch rating system and all is really good. But there are other incentives at work right now. Like, for instance, one of the reasons why these types of pitches are getting prepared is because, you know, the toss, they take the toss out of the game, no? Like, you know, a team which wins the toss and bats first scores on average 358, and a team which is sent in after losing the toss scores on average 311 in the first innings. That means the toss is worth 47 runs in lead on average in test cricket, right? So with WTC points, you know, at stake, no home team is going to like give up 47 points, 47 runs. Like no team is going to do that. Let that sort of be, you know, dependent on the toss. You know, I mean, in Australia, they don't have that problem so much because, you know, they rarely have days when, you know, it's absolutely flat, especially now, you know, once they've relayed the MCG and even, you know, the SCG, they're leaving more grass and so on and so forth. And they rarely have draws as it is. So that's another reason why these teams are doing, like, putting out, you know, result pitches. Because they don't want to be beholden to the toss. You know, so I don't have a problem with the players getting frustrated and saying things, you know. But I don't think that the umpires and the referees should be. Because I mean, what is the be more transparent means what? So what is the subtext over there? You know, which is what? You're not transparent, so what? You may be doing what exactly?
No, the subtext over there is that it's not neutral, that there's bias.
But based on what?
Indian pitches get low ratings, whereas these pitches might go, you know.
But they don't, no. I mean, the last time India played a test match like this in South Africa in 2018, Johannesburg, the umpires actually stopped the game because it was dangerous and the pitch was rated poor. You know, in Brisbane, the same thing happened last year and the pitch was rated poor. So, when the pitch is, I mean, there's no actual evidence that there's bias in the pitch rating system. You know, there is bias in the way pitches are described in the public discourse.
Let me just give you an example. In 2017, there was this lawyer, a very sharp lawyer called Alok Prasanna Kumar, who wrote to me and said that, you know, he's very interested to find out about the warnings, fines, bans that the ICC hands out. And he wants to sort of find out, you know, he wants to document it. And he wants to find out, like, which countries, which players have got fined, which this, that, that. So I thought it was a good idea. And I wrote to the ICC and said that we would like to have the record of the teams that have been fined for over 8, the players that have been fined or banned or whatever, or you know, suspended for whatever reason. The ICC were kind enough to provide me a lot of detail and a lot of data.
Yeah.
And he published an article.
They published those fines, but they don't publish the transcripts of the hearings, no?
Yeah, they don't. So all I'm saying is in the ICC website, if there is a section for things like fines, bans, you know, just recording it. If there is for pitches, pitch ratings, if there is a section.
But there is. Pitch ratings are available. They're published on the website.
They are published, but they are not, the charts are not published. The extent of bounce is not published. No.
Yeah. But that's the same thing. No, that the hearing transcripts are not published for the fines and regulations.
Okay, so you're saying they don't need to get into micro detail.
They don't have to prove that they're not crooks.
Hmm.
And like these are referees who are doing this every match. No, the referee has got what experience of like evaluating dozens and dozens of pitches. You know. So they know what they're doing. You at least give me one good reason, no, for thinking that they're biased. You can't just say that they're biased because, you know, the referee is white and the teams are not.
No, the one area I agree with you is this, is that there is no end to it. Because, okay, even if tomorrow the ICC publishes every single...
There is a good faith beginning to it either.
Yeah, and even if the ICC publishes every single detail of the pitch ratings of every single pitch, there will always be something that more that people will want to see. And then you are basically talking about your own bias in the situation rather than their bias. right? So, yeah. So, there is no end to it. That's true.
But there is a problem. There is a problem with the way pitches are described. You know, in all this talk about the ICC, that is something that, you know, is that needs to be aired. You know, this whole thing about, you know, how turning pitches are described and how seeming pitches are described. Like the editor of Wisden, what's his name? Lawrence Booth. He sort of casually, they all sort of casually say that a turning pitch is an underprepared pitch. You know, every description of a turning pitch is derogatory. You know, it's an underprepared pitch. It's a dust bowl. It's a doctored pitch. It's a designer pitch. It's everything is, you know, you're underhanded and you're, or you're lazy or some combination of the two.
Okay, whereas let's put it this way. I think every
seeming pitch is a challenging pitch. You know, like a test of your technique.
I've been saying this for a while now. Certain sections of people, when they talk about turning pitches, in which subcontinental teams naturally excel, you know, it is a very prejudiced thing that they say. It is prejudiced. That's it. There is no sugarcoating it. You know, and they say that.
Why? And when you say that, when someone says that they're prejudiced, I don't see the point of like speaking up for those people who are prejudiced. Yeah. But this, that. There's no but this, that. They are prejudiced in this subject. The description of pitches is unequal.
The language used is certainly a problem, and the terms used is certainly an issue. But there is one line of argument that is hard to counter, is that even on this pitch, in this second test, it was who was getting the wickets? Viraj, Bumrah, the South African bowler, they were getting the wickets, right? But in a test remember India and England played a day-night test in Ahmedabad, where Joe Root got 5 for 8. So the argument there is, if Joe Root can get 5 for 8, then how can that not be a match? So this is the difficult sort of situation where you cannot counter. It's not like...
Yeah, but it's a stupid argument. No, it's not really an argument at all. You know, I mean, what? Michael Clarke got what? 3 wickets in 2 overs?
6 for 9.
At Sydney. No, he got 3 wickets
in 1 over. In 1 over.
Yeah.
In 1 over. Yeah, so like freaky things happen. So what?
At the risk of offending Ashoka, I mean, Shardul Thakur got a 7-wicket haul.
True.
At the risk of offending KD, even Cummins has got 250 wickets, man. Freaky things happen.
Yeah. No. The sort of the
but it's not
the
a good
idea.
Argument. No, it's not a good argument. Come on. You can't have a situation where, you know, India winning by like 300 runs and call it a bad pitch spin.
Also, Joe Root getting a 5-wicket haul and Michael Clarke getting a 6-wicket haul happens once in a decade, once in 1.5 decades. But the frequency with which pitches are described as devious happens far more frequently.
Also, you have to ask the question, why was Joe Root bowling in the first place? Because you don't have frontline spinners to exploit that condition, no.
Yeah.
No, you had frontline spinners. They didn't get the 5-foot.
Yeah. So, what, man?
I mean, it's not like Moeen is getting lots of wickets on these pitches, no?
In fact, I would say
it's not even an argument. I don't like this business of when someone says some nonsense, you have to be nice and say, well, it's not really nonsense. It is nonsense, man.
Also,
you have to say that, well, it's a sort of, okay, I'm going to say that, I'm going to like desperately try to look for some merit in some corner or what.
No, Kerry, there's nuance. There's nuance in the argument. That's the word.
No, there's no nuance in the argument. There's nuance in you're inventing nuance where there is none.
KD has respectfully disagreed to disagree, man. He never agrees to disagree.
See, this whole, there is a perfect pitch for test cricket is all faltu. It's all faff. There is no perfect pitch for test cricket. This is something that has been invented in people's minds that on the first day, the pitch should do something. On day 3, it should do something, or day 5, it should do something. And the same people who say this will then say, but who has time to go for 5 days to test cricket? Then don't go. No, then go for 1.5 days and watch this match, you know, in South Africa. Then at least, you know, it's good. So then don't moan about this pitch. So then, you don't have 5 days.
No. If you want
the perfect pitch.
If you give them this pitch, saying that at least you don't have 5 days, go watch 1.5 days. They will say, what about the vendors in the ground who are suffering? You are not suffering. No, let the vendors figure that out with the administration. What is your problem? Why are you raising flags for everything?
The vendors will take care of themselves. They will find other places to sell their stuff. Don't worry.
Listen, you guys don't understand the point of Test cricket. The point of Test cricket is to give its fans a very safe zone to express their anxieties about life. Okay. See, you can complain about the quality of food going down, the quality of governance going down, and birth rate going down, whatever. Those are real problems. You know, when people complain about it, it's not a good thing. But Test cricket is a comfortable, safe zone where you are enjoying the cricket while simultaneously worried about some past which is glorious and some present which is not.
But it's also like that this ideal pitch, which is does not exist anywhere in the world. It's like, it's a bloody unfair pitch, man. Because only one side gets to bowl when it's seaming. And like one side has to bowl when it's spinning. And it's like the pitch is different when different teams are batting, man. How is that fair?
See, this is like, why you don't understand the value of having Glenn McGrath and Shane Warne in the same team. Again, that is why Australia is the greatest team.
Also,
no,
this guy
that
is trying
Australia
to bring...
is the greatest team because nobody else had Shane Warne and Glenn McGrath in the opposition.
Once again, KD has failed because he's trying to logic his way out of, you know, a problem. How much times have I told you don't use logic? You could have saved a lot of bandwidth in your life. Don't use logic.
By the way, the comedy is going to continue because England are coming to India for 5 tests. Now, take a deep breath. 5 tests, all of which is probably going to end in 2.5 days. Like each test is
prepare Turners, man. I mean, India want to make the WTC final. You think they're going to prepare a flat pitch and like let England bat first?
No, there's going to be double comedy here. The double comedy here is England they have to continue their baseball marketing, right? So they have to continue the playing the way they are playing. Then they are going to get these pitches that are going to be like this. Going to be like ultimate fun to watch these 5 tests.
But I am excited. If they actually... one thing I have not seen batters do, because it's really, really tough, is that they consistently attack Ashwin and Jadeja at home. Let's see. It might even be like 30 all out or 300 for 2. Zach Crawley may make a double 100 in like 80 balls.
I would actually love if England win this series using their ultra-aggressive batting approach. But the problem is, I don't think they have the bowling to win in India. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they have enough spin to win in India on these pitches, but let's wait and watch. Yeah,
but the thing is that, you know, this whole discussion of like, what's a good pitch? Now, you know, with this referees, now we were talking about bad faith. Now, this is just the whole thing about complaining about the pitch. It's just completely bad faith. It's like you're losing, and so then you start complaining about the pitch. You know? And then when you're at home, you're winning, and you keep defending the pitch. And I tend to think that, like, as long as the pitch is not dangerous, it's fine. Yeah, whether it turns or whether it seems, it's fine. I think this Cape Town pitch was, as long as it's not classed dangerous, and I don't think it will be because, you know, they were able to finish the match. Like, I think it may be below average or poor, one of those. But, you know, it's okay. Once in a while, you will have a poor pitch. You know, you're not always going to have, like, you know, 350 plays, 350 pitches.
Rohit Sharma was not complaining about this pitch. And that's one thing that ever since, you know, Kohli and Shastri's time, that one feature of this Indian team is they don't complain about the pitches they play on. They played on like pitches that really, really don't favor them. And yet they have competed and still they have not complained. So,
to be fair, no team complains about the pitches. Even England came to India, like, you know, Agnew and the BBC and all those people were complaining about the pitches. Like Joe Root and, you know, Ben Stokes and like the English team never complained at all. You know, it's like the teams never complain. Like
as Ravi Shastri,
like the competition, I think.
As Ravi Shastri famously said, you can take a dump on a pitch and it will still be fine.
Yeah.
I don't think he said that, but yeah, that is the spirit.
I think he
finally topped himself. He has actually managed to dump on like that thing that Ravi Shastri said.
I think Ravi Shastri's famous line was "Bad me gaya pitch." So that's what he told the team. Yeah,
he said take the pitch out of the game. Then Kohli asked him, "Where will we play?" He said, "Okay, that's not what I meant."
Since we are called 81 all out, I just want to point out that, you know, Sachin Tendulkar must have watched that chase yesterday and he must have wondered, like, I wish I had this top three above me in Barbados in 1997. Like, at least they tried something. They went after the bowling and all. And they, like, if these guys are going after Rabada, I mean, they would have surely also gone after Ambrose, man.
Come on, that was a really dangerous pitch, man. I mean,
West Indies just made 140 on it.
No, okay, you're right. You're right that India didn't go after
this whole thing where, you know, all this ancient stuff, you know, anything which happened in the 90s or the 80s or something, is somehow like this, like the impossibly difficult and impossibly
You saw the ball that Sidhu got, right? I mean, you saw the ball that
leapt of a good length and hit Rohit Sharma in the chest, and then you saw the ball which leapt of the which hit
Before we move on from this, let me highlight Rohit Sharma got hit like two or three times like that. It's not the fact that he got hit. It's the fact that he had the technique to get hit and not.
No, man. Cornered. You know that what he had. Come on. Tell the truth. It is not that he had technique. He had the flesh covering so that he...
now we're getting into Mumbai street food territory. Yeah? Don't do that. Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering whether he was going to go there and he went there.
the idea, I completely agree with the point that you're making, that they didn't go after the bowling even though they were chasing 120. They were, you know, they were playing, but this Indian team, they actually went for it because obviously they took their chances.
This Indian team is better, no? And this is not like, you can't just go after the bowling if you've never done it before, no? But these guys are done it. Now, these guys have played so much fast bowling and they have so much experience of like playing all kinds of attacking shots, lofted shots of fast bowling. They have cultivated a lot of run scoring methods. You know, I mean, I looked at this statistic after this test match because I thought that it was exceptional. What I've seen from India and India's batting in this test match was pretty exceptional. India's top six made 199 and 279 balls in this test match, in the second test match for six wickets. They made their runs at 4.3 runs per over. You know, in all the test matches in this century, like starting in 2000, there are only two test matches in which India's top six have averaged 4 runs per over in a test match. One is when Virendra Sehwag made 180 at St. Lucia. And the other is earlier this year in West Indies when India, you know, in the second innings, India batted really fast to set up a declaration. Those are the only two. But
I think the filter here is the SENAW, right?
Yeah, outside Asia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, every time we have to face this, you know, even now, like, this is like, oh, where is the technique? Who can defend? Who can this? Actually, this happened to England also last time they came, you know, where there are all these ex-English players of a certain vintage going, oh, there's no defensive technique. No, what are they doing? And this and that. And like as Atherton explained, you know, all those old methods of using the bat and the pad close together, they don't really work when you have DRS. You know, so, you know, it isn't like these guys don't know something that, you know, their predecessors knew. These guys are not stupid. They're not incompetent either. They're as good, if not better, than whatever came before them. You know, so, I mean, yeah, you have these guys. I mean, and clearly it was a plan, right, to go after the bowling. Everybody was doing it. Rohit Sharma was backing away to leg and trying to smash the bowling. You know, so was Jaiswal. And like every time Jaiswal like backed away to or Gill or somebody hit over the top, you know, they would, of course, Kohli cam is on because Kohli is next man and then he's sitting in the dugout by the boundary rope. So they show Kohli cam and Kohli is like clapping and applauding. So clearly this is a plan. This is how they wanted to play. You know, even Kohli was stepping out to the fast bowler and trying to hit him for a boundary. So, I mean, even in the first innings, they played their shots. You know, even in the first innings, in fact, in the second over of the first innings, you know, Rohit Sharma got one on a length on about the fifth or sixth stump. And he threw the bat at it like, you know, he was trying to absolutely slaughter it into the offside. You know, I thought that was interesting. I thought that was like unusual, which suggested that, you know, that was their judgment of the pitch. They said, oh, this is not a pitch on which you defend your off stump. This is a pitch on which you got the bowling. And it worked. Whatever they tried worked. So every time we go on and say like, oh, they don't do... Here you're seeing right in front of your eyes, they have a method, they've made a judgment and they've taken a decision and it has worked, right?
No, and
captaincy and all, yeah, this is... What is this if this is not captaincy, man? And
no,
what
is this? This is the thumb
rule. I am so glad. I was about to add that point. I'm so glad you finally arrived at the point. I completely agree with you. If Rohit Sharma was a captain in Barbados in 1997, India would have won the test.
If this team had gone to West Indies in 1997, they would have won more than one test.
Anyway, so I think we are running out of time. I certainly am. We haven't spoken much about the Indian batting in this series, but
Kohli,
I think,
King Kohli.
We haven't said anything about King Kohli. We haven't said anything about KL Rahul. We had a stupendous innings, perhaps the best Indian innings in South Africa. Perhaps I say carefully because there have been many other good
ones. Since Rishabh Pant's last greatest innings in South Africa
in Cape Town, correct. Yeah, that was
That's just a measure of how good this batting lineup was.
Thank you so much for joining. 81allout.com is our website. At 81allout is our X handle. We are on Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/81allout. And we are grateful for all of you who have been chipping in with your contributions there. Some of you have been putting in a monthly sort of contribution. Others have been just putting in a one-off. Thank you so much for that. It really helps us, you know, it keeps us, it sort of shows us that you appreciate what we're doing more than anything. So that's what we're grateful for. We also are in the book republishing space. We have put out 3 books and I'll put links to all of those. The first book that we put out was War Minus the Shooting by Mike Marquesi, and that continues to be a really good seller for us. So, you know, it's a marvelous book. Please pick it up. I'll also put links to the other 2 books. Gideon Hayes' Summer Game was the latest one that we put out. And we also published Cricket Beyond the Bazaar by Mike Coward, which is the history of Australia's tour to the subcontinent in the 1980s. Anyway, thanks again for joining. We have some good cricket coming up. Later this month, we have England coming to India for 5 test series, as we mentioned, and we'd love to preview that and review those tests. So we'll definitely be joining you in due course. Thank you. And thanks, Mahesh. Thanks, Ashoka. Thanks, Kartikeya. And good night.
We'll come back for the second. India have won the test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for 2.